Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello, Chris Evans here, and welcome to yet another star-studded edition of the Best of the Breakfast Show podcast with Sky from Virgin Radio. Coming up, the one, the only, Bob Odenkirk tells us about his brand new book, Comedy, Comedy, Comedy Drama, and looks ahead to the final season of Better Call Saul. Hollywood superstar Jared Leto gets his fangs into another smash hit movie with his latest blood-sucking offering, Morbius. The always hilarious and uber-generous David Walliams and the iconic Boy George go through some of the incredible lots from the auction for Ukraine, of which several they were responsible for themselves. And Kaiser Chiefs frontman Ricky Wilson brings the excitement ahead of their newly announced 13-day UK arena tour, happening later this year. All of that and so much more to come. So Vassos, pray tell, who is up first?
Our next guest is an Emmy award-winning actor, comedian and director. You'll know him from Breaking Bad, Better Call Saul and most of the other stuff on your telly for the past 30 years. And now you can really know him through his brilliant memoir, Comedy, Comedy, Comedy Drama, which is out now. It's Bob Odenkirk.
Good morning, Bob. Welcome to the show. How are you, man?
There's so much energy. It's too early.
Yeah, we're just dialing down, by the way. We've peaked.
Really? You're toning it down?
Yes, it says,
man. Oh, my
God.
Yeah. Everything's great. I'm so happy to be here, and it's been sunny all week. I want to tell all my friends at home, come to London if you want some sun. It's beautiful here.
It is beautiful. What a book. Comedy, 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 Drama. That's the title of the book. Comedy, 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 Drama. And the maths of your career is sort of done for us within that title, isn't it, really?
Yeah. Well, I wanted to warn people off because I'm most well known for the drama, for Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul, and lately Nobody, the action film I did last year. But most of my career was spent writing comedy in America. And I wanted to write about it because I love it so much. And some of the British comedy that inspired me as well as a kid.
Well, you say some of it. I mean, we'll go everywhere with this interview. So just stick with us, everyone. We'll get to Breaking Bad and we'll get to Better Call Saul. We might go there next. I don't know. But we're going to kick off with you being punked as a kid. And you were punked by Monty Python. So tell us where you were when you first saw an episode of Monty Python and what immediate effect it had on you.
I was in my living room in Naperville, Illinois, little town outside of Chicago named after a guy named Joe Naper. It's a very American thing. Guy that comes to town and says, I'm going to make a town, name it after myself. And I was sitting there, and here it comes on at a Sunday nights at 10:30. I can't believe my mom let me stay up, but I think she was already asleep and didn't know we were even awake. There were seven kids in my family, and she couldn't keep track of us. Anyway, Python comes on, and it made me so happy. It was like a message from the adult world that everything was going to be okay because everybody was lunatics.
And it was so original because, you know, sketch shows are fantastic at their best, but horrible and, you know, so mundane and perfunctory at their worst. But this wasn't anything like that.
No. We had the worst comedy going on in America in the 70s. We had Bob Hope running out of steam. We had John Denver being very sweet and gentle. His music is great. Nothing against his music. And we just didn't have this cutting stuff that you guys had, like smart, absurdist, you know, it had an edge to it. And Eric Idle says in his book, it was comedy with anger in it. And that I really related to.
You're 11 and you're watching Monty Python. Yeah. Okay. And you're watching SNL a few years later.
Yeah.
And now you are friends with Eric Idle and you've worked on SNL. Can you imagine? Or could you have imagined? You and your wife are friends with Eric and his wife, and you go out for dinner.
Yeah, we have more than once.
I mean, and come on, that's
it's crazy. Hey, I can't do the math on it. Thank you.
Well done. That's sort of it, isn't it, really?
Yeah. It's hard to believe that I've gotten to this place and had those experiences. In fact, the night before I went to shoot Nobody, I was out to dinner. My wife and I were out to dinner with Eric and his wife and Matt Walsh, who's from the UCB. You may not know this group, but he's in Veep.
Yeah.
And we were a group going. We went out, and I told these people, my wife was the only one who knew, I'm going tomorrow to go make an action movie. And everyone was mystified, absolutely mystified that they just couldn't understand what I was, that I could be telling the truth. And we went and made that film, and it turned out all right.
More than all right, by the way. More than all right. Yeah. It's available now on Amazon Prime. It's $8.99. I know this because I watched it at the weekend. To buy. Although I don't know how you buy it because you don't get it. It's just like renting it, really.
Yeah.
Anyway, so read the book, everyone. Comedy, drama. Now we will fast forward to.
Yeah.
Is it fair to say, right, that your most renowned achievements began to happen in what was obviously the second half of your life? And in that way, you were a late developer.
Absolutely. I mean, I loved doing the comedy that I did, and I helped start Tim and Eric and Tenacious D and a lot of things that people know. That was the world I loved being in, fringe comedy. But then this opportunity came, phone call, will you be on the show Breaking Bad? And, I was just going to say yes, just for the fun of it, really. You know, just for the excitement of trying something. And showed up, and here's this character, Saul Goodman. Great fun to play. And here's these great actors around me anchoring the whole thing. And I don't have to worry about that stuff. I can just be fun and kind of go cut loose.
Right. So Saul, he's a breakout character.
Yeah.
He may have been there for 3 or 4 episodes. He ends up staying for a long, long time. And then one of the engineers or somebody on the crew says...
Cameraman.
What's the story?
Yeah, it was like the fourth take. It was the big scene with me and Brian and in the first episode I did. We were on our third or fourth take. I did my long run, a riff that Saul does, explaining that it's all a front. He's, you know, phony. And one of the cameramen, after they say cut, says, can I get a job on the spinoff? And everyone laughed because everyone immediately understood, like, this character is bigger than anybody we've seen that came in and was brought into the series. And everyone laughed. And then it became a conversation piece with the writers. What could a show be? What could you do with this character? And they talked about maybe a half-hour sitcom. They talked about a one-hour procedural show. That's where every week Saul would have a different client, and he would manage their case without going to court. He's a lawyer who's never, ever been to court and never will go. And he just manipulates people, the judge, the other attorneys, to solve the case or to solve their problem. And then they settled on a drama, Better Call Saul, which is similar but not exactly the same as Breaking Bad.
And we're hurtling towards the final season of that, season 6.
Yeah, we finished shooting 1 month ago, and we have 13 episodes coming on April 18th, wow, that week. I can't wait for you to see them. The finale season is the best
ever. All episodes available straight off the bat?
No. It will play one per week.
But we're almost out of time. What else would you like to say that
I've
maybe
missed? I'd like to say, I hope you'll give my book a chance. And when you do, there's going to be a lot of comedy reference that you didn't see here in England. It didn't play. But you can go on YouTube, and I mentioned the sketches by name. You can watch almost all of those sketches. So if you do read the book and you feel like you're left out, go ahead and watch them. Some great stuff that I got to be a part of. And can't wait for you to see the final season of Better Call Saul. It's the best season we've done.
Okay. And by the way, you got to check out Bob's new film, Nobody, because it's not what you might expect, but it certainly absolutely pays off. Just before you go, one more question.
Yeah.
Do you have change for a dollar?
Let me go in the back and check.
We'll leave it there. Thank you, Bob.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky.
Virgin Radio.
From winning an Oscar to winning over music fans in their millions, our next guest has done it all. His dark, thrilling and thirsty new movie, Morbius, is in cinemas from next Thursday. So please welcome a man that can only be made ugly by thousands of dollars of CGI and prosthetic makeup. It's the blood-suckingly brilliant Jared Leto!
Good morning, Jared!
Thank you. Good morning. Thanks so much for having me. And I just have the little correction there. It's not thousands of dollars of CGI. It's millions.
So how ugly did they achieve in the end?
Well, I don't know. I have to say Monstrous Morbius is quite a beautiful creature to me.
Right.
So I'm a little biased, but you know. It's a monster. He's got to have some rough edges.
All right. So it's a brand new Marvel film. How is it to inhabit the world of Marvel?
It's a beautiful thing. You know, I'd never been in a film like this. I'd never starred in a big Marvel movie, obviously. But what I loved about it is it's the very first time this character has ever been on the screen. So it was quite a honor to be asked to bring it to life.
So because nobody's given us Morbius before, does that mean there's less chance of you getting it wrong because there's no comparison?
Well, I mean, I don't look at it that way. You can always get it wrong. And I think it's your job to dig deep, to work as hard as you can to bring something that's, you know, entertaining and exciting for audiences. And I did exactly that. There's a massive transformation in this role. And I really dug in and loved every single second of it.
All right. So he's a spin-off, isn't he? So the film is a new Spider-Man comic book spin-off with yourself playing the vampire, Dr. Michael Morbius. Now, you have a pal slash nemesis in the form of Matt Smith, our very own great Brit Matt Smith. What does he get up to?
That's right. He's a good man and a great actor and was the perfect partner in crime for this.
So tell us about him, his character, and your relationship, Morbius's relationship to him.
Well, we're basically like brothers. We both kind of have the same rare disease, and we grew up kind of commiserating and got to know each other in a deep way that young people that are faced with that kind of intense challenge might. And then we kind of take divergent career paths, so to speak.
Yeah, and how was Matt? I mean, I know Matt quite well, maybe not as well as you, but I mean, he is a cool dude, isn't he? He's great to be with. He's great to hang out with. He wears his talent very lightly on his sleeve, if you know what I mean.
You know, and probably because he's so gifted, he's just a joy to work with. I think we both felt like we had an opportunity here to kind of get in the ring with one another and see what we were made of. And it was, he was just perfectly cast. I enjoyed it a lot.
Pretty cool. Pretty cool. It says, I've read that you were surprised, if this is right or not, you might have been misquoted. You were surprised by how challenging the role was in the end.
No, that's not true.
Right.
I definitely was not surprised. I knew I'd never done anything like this before. And, you know, I managed to find a way to always, you know, make things creatively pretty challenging. And I enjoy that. I'm a big believer that, you know, the harder you work, the greater the reward. And it's your job to take really, you know, big risks. And we did that here. And the thing that's different about it as well is you have this big Marvel movie, but it also walks on the darker side of the Marvel universe and has elements of horror. It's a bit scary at times. And I think just a fun film for people that haven't been in theaters to get back into theaters and go have a blast with and enjoy.
Yeah, no, I thought that was wrong. I'm so glad we touched upon that because you knew it was going to be a challenge, but you welcomed the challenge. And it's important, isn't it? It's important to push yourself. You know, that's where growth lies. What did you learn about yourself as an actor by going to the sort of extreme boundaries of where you'd been before and further?
Well, it's different starring in a movie too. You know, I've made a, you know, a large part of my career has been playing smaller roles in films. I've always focused heavy on character. I've always dived in pretty deep. But this one, you know, there's a different kind of pressure, a different set of expectations when you star in a movie. And when you're introducing a character for the first time in an origin story, it's just a different experience. You learn different things, and I enjoyed it a lot.
The great thing about Marvel movies now, and you know all the superhero movies now, is they're so much better than they ever were. The gloves are off. There are no rules. I love it. Just take the new Spider-Man movie and all the parallel universes and things that go on there. I won't spoil it for anybody who's not seen it yet. Somebody did for me who works on the program, but that's another story. But of course, you get the humour. You know, you get the sort of the almost Shakespearean exchanges sometimes between Marvel heroes, but also you do get a decent message. What's the message behind this one, do you think?
I mean, it's a great question. We meet Dr. Michael Morbius when he's very sick. He's searching for a cure for a very, very rare disease that he has and Milo has. So he's this guy who really is selfless and dedicated his life towards this goal. And when he finds a cure, ultimately he gets powerful and strong, but then doesn't get everything that he expected. So, you know, I don't want to give too much away, but, you know, there are some surprises.
It's in cinemas here in the UK from March 31st, which is next Thursday. Has it played anywhere else yet in the world, or is it a global release?
No, we just did a premiere in Berlin, Madrid, Paris, and London last night.
Right, and you get the vibe, don't you? You get a good vibe. What's your vibe on this? What's your vibe? Because you've had other things like this in the past.
Yeah. The vibe is that it's a big, fun action-adventure movie, and it has elements of horror, so that makes it a little bit different. But it's a lot of fun. You know, it's a big popcorn movie, and I think it's the right movie for the right time. People that haven't been in theaters that want to get back into theaters,
It's
a movie you want to see at the big screen, and it's exclusively in theaters, which I think is great. I'm a big fan of cinema and happy to support it.
Jared, listen, thanks for your time, man. Good luck with the movie. Nice for you to carve out some time to appear on our program. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, absolute pleasure. And maybe we'll come back sometime and be able to see you with 30 Seconds to Mars. Little band my brother and I have.
Hey, man, anytime you like. Okay, that is an open invite. Anytime you like. Come and play live on the show.
Thank you, brother. Take care.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky.
Virgin Radio.
If you like your cucumber sandwiches with a dash of sauce and a side of chuckles, then we have just the lot for you. That's right. In our auction for Ukraine, afternoon tea is on the table. To be more specific, his table in his house. So please welcome a man famous for his generous spread. It's David Walliams.
Hello, David.
Good morning. What a wonderful welcome.
I know. You're great. You deserve that times 10. So lot number 10, afternoon tea for two at my house. So is that two other people or
no,
just...
It what? Can be two, a whole family of people. I mean, I'm assuming people with kids who might read my children's book, Water Calm. And I will lay on a lovely spread for you. We'll have tea and cakes and milkshakes for the kids. And I've got a big cupboard full of my books, unsold copies, that otherwise would be in a bargain bin. That I can sign for you.
Beautiful.
And we can do lots of pictures and we can chat and we'll have a fun afternoon. You can meet my doggies. So it's a really nice thing to do. So, you know, really fun to meet new people all the time. And if anybody out there has got kids who are sort of into my children's books, then come along. I live in London. So if you live in Outer Mongolia, probably a bit tough. But if you live in the UK, you can probably get to London and have a fun day out and come and see me for tea.
Well, this is wonderful. It's so personal. And the more personal these things are, the better they do, because you can sort of smell the sincerity behind them. And whilst we've been on the air, just via this, during this conversation, it's gone up by £2,000. So we're at 14 grand. Peter Yates, who's been with you from the beginning, Peter Yates' first bid was on Wednesday morning for £2,500. He's since bid 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 times, and he's been outbid every time, and he's just been outbid again.
But I have a restraining order against PTA.
Oh, do you?
So I'm a little bit concerned about that.
All right. Well, we can
maybe a different PTA. I don't know.
Yeah, but we can scrub him off. Fine. Okay.
No, thank you, Peter, for your generosity. That's absolutely fantastic. And do let me know what you like in your sandwiches.
All right, so are you going to make these, or are you going to have somebody make them, or what's going
to
happen?
I think somebody will make them, to be honest with you, Chris. But I will be buying the cakes. I won't be making them, but I'll be buying them. So we've got a lovely little cake shop near me, which does the most wonderful cupcakes. So we'll have a whole spread of cupcakes of every flavour. And if you like scones and cream and jam, we can do that as well. And it's afternoon tea, I think, is the best meal of the day.
Yeah.
Because it's the most it's one you don't need to have.
Yeah, and it definitely has the most calories per bite.
Yeah.
Without question.
Really, really decadent and fun, isn't it? And so there's something lovely about afternoon tea. And kids, I think, love it as well. Because it's one where you get to have all the sweet treats, isn't it? So
yeah.
I'm sure we can have fun.
You know, and regulars on telly will know, Anton Deck know this, you know this. There are certain things you can have sort of mid-series, sort of in-between series that you have to knock on the head about 3 or 4 weeks beforehand. So I'm guessing sort of afternoon tea gets a little less frequent when you're 3 or 4 weeks away from like a Britain's Got Talent run or something like that.
Luckily, no one cares what I look like.
You do,
I'm
though.
I'm much like you, Chris. Like, we're not prized for our good looks. We never have been.
See, in my mind, we are.
In a way, it's a miracle we're on television at all.
Well, I'm not anymore. I'm not. And the point is, David, I'm really not. You know I'm not. But there's a lot to go on this morning. So you can bid to be on this morning, and I'm bidding for it because it's the only way I can get back on telly, to be honest.
Oh, I still think it could backfire terribly, Chris.
No, but I would get to be in a fashion item and read some water cue.
Well, can you still do that at your age? I'm not sure you'd be able to do that, would you? I think that'd be fine. I'd love to see you on that, actually. Hey, here's the thing. If you bid for the fashion item, I promise to come on and model the clothes.
Okay, well, that's it then. We're done. It's currently 3,400. It's interesting, though, isn't it? So tea at your house, 14 grand, yeah. A whole morning at this morning with Holly and Phil... So far, 3,400. I mean, you know, the auction's online until midnight tonight. For obvious reasons, David, on a Friday, the bids tend to go a bit crazy. About 7:30 onwards. Can't imagine why that would be.
Well, I guess people have had a few glasses of wine and they go a bit crazy, yeah. Don't they?
Hopefully many bottles.
How much did you bid? Yes. How much did you bid? Yeah. I'm getting terrible trouble.
Tonight, we enthuse you to drink for Ukraine. That's what we're supposed to do.
You know, it couldn't be a better cause, and I think everybody, you know, is watching the news is thinking, what can I do? And there's a horrible feeling of helplessness. So what you're doing is brilliant, Chris, and it's amazing you've got so many fantastic people to donate all these things. And well, you know, it's just a pleasure, because I think all of us are thinking, what can we do, you know, to make things right. And so this is a wonderful step in the right direction.
Well, can't do it without you guys, can't do it without the people bidding, and I'm just very, very happy, elated and grateful to get to be stuck in the middle amongst all this stuff. David, I love you. Can't wait to see you again. Thank you so much.
I love you too. I hope it all goes well tonight, and I hope I get to model those dresses on this morning.
Do us a favour, have a look at it tonight, because it's great viewing. Because it does go mad at about between 8 and 9 o'clock. It just goes crazy, all right? So have a look.
Wine aplenty and get bidding, guys.
Exactly. Thank you very much. There it is, lot number 10. David Williams, tea at his house, currently at £14,000. Peter, you're going to have to bid again. It's against you all with anonymous at anonymous hashtag 2994, £14,000 against you all.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky.
Virgin Radio.
If you fancy owning a hat, a photo or an actual song by an era-defining musical and cultural icon, then look no further. He's donated exactly those to the auction for Ukraine, and you can bid on them right now. So, ladies and gentlemen, would you believe it? By Jove, it's Boy George!
Morning, George!
Hello, Chris. It sounds so exciting, your auction. Oh, my God, I'm like, Jamie Dornan, dinner at your house. So glamorous.
Yeah, room for a small one. Right, so tell us about your hat, which is gorgeous, and you've sort of accessorized it. And then tell us about this amazing offer of us, all the rights to one of your songs.
Well, you know, you asked for something that was affordable, so as a photo. And then you asked for something, you know, like, I don't know, personal, which is the hat. And then the third request was for something that I've never auctioned before, and I've never auctioned a song. I mean, I don't think anyone has. You know, and I thought, well, what's something I would never just give away? And then, you know, I think the song is a good one because, you know, music's so personal, but also, you know, I wrote the song about what's going on, you know, and, you know, it'd be amazing to you know, use music to do something positive.
So you've been to Ukraine, and this song is about your experience and your love of Ukraine.
I went there about 8 years ago. I DJed there and I had the most amazing night. And I remember thinking, this is such a beautiful place. I must come back. And I suppose the spirit of the song is saying, you know, Ukraine is a beautiful country and hopefully it will be a beautiful country again. You know, and I watched this young kid the other day on Instagram saying, don't be sad about all of it. It's difficult not to be. Do you know what I mean? Because you know, we're just looking at it and we're horrified and feeling helpless. And, you know, to me, it's just music's the thing that's always saved me in all my difficult situations. So I think it's a good thing to do. And you know, it's quite nice to let go of it, you know?
Yeah, completely, 100%. And it is horrible and it is full of horror and terror, the situation over there, and suffering. But what you have to do is you then have to take that as fuel and you have to turn it into something good. That's our responsibility. And that's the least we can do and the most we can do.
The interesting thing, because obviously the song was originally called That Night in Kiev, and then I got people saying, no, it's not that. So I had to rewrite some of the lyrics to make it about Kyiv, which, and also I think that's significant as well, because it's the new way of saying Kyiv. That's what people in Kyiv want you to say, Kyiv.
Yeah, no, I get it. So how come you ended up there? When was it again, and how long did you spend there, and who did you meet?
It was about 8 years ago. And what was really funny, because I went with my brother-in-law, my sister's husband, and everybody kept thinking we were a couple. So I actually mentioned that in the song. People kept saying, how long have you two been together? And I was like, oh my God, this is my sister's husband. I just remember thinking it was such a beautiful place. You know, it was like summer. I got picked up by this incredible kid who was like a punk rocker in this big American car, like one of the Addams Family. So the whole trip from beginning to end was just magical. And I remember thinking, I must go back, you know, and I would love to do that. We'd love to go back and sing this song in Kyiv.
Well, when this is over, and it will be over, because, you know, all things must pass, you know, you can imagine what's going to happen in Kyiv. You can imagine, you know, people going there, people like yourself turning up, and not so much to celebrate, but to sort of stand firm, you know, and to reestablish a new beginning for Kyiv, which has to happen. Of course it does. I've got a picture of you here on Zoom now. You look fantastic. I mean, it's 8:15 in the morning. You're good to go, George.
I always look like this.
You got one of your hats on. Your hats are so cool. Where'd you get them from?
I get these particular ones from a shop called The Child of the Jager, which is owned by Vivian Westwood's son, Joe.
Right.
And that's the only place I can get hats big enough for my head.
And where do you keep all your hats?
Everywhere. Literally, open cupboards, they fall out. You go under the bed, there's more.
It's funny.
They're everywhere.
Because last week there was that big question doing the rounds, you know, wheels or doors? What do we have most of on Earth, wheels or doors? And it kept people going for it. It was quite a wordly kind of fun conversation to have. But I'm presuming, you know, when it comes to items of clothing, if it was like hats or anything else or everything else, hats in your house may still win.
I think hats would win because, you know, I'm always finding things in strange places. Squashed hats, hats that have been forgotten about, hats that are stuck together.
Love
you
it.
Know, all sorts of things.
Love it. I just had David Williams on. David's given us lunch at his house. Tea at his house, you know, and he's going to host it at his actual house, which is so cool, doing really well. And I enthused David, I encouraged him to stay tuned, you know, have his laptop open today or his smart device and just check out the auction because it gets really exciting. Tonight, George, between sort of 7 and midnight, it goes crazy. It goes off. I mean, we're really happy with the total we've got already. It's incredible. It's actually just short of £500,000 now, which is fantastic. But do us a favour tonight, wherever you are, just check it out because it goes absolutely crazy.
I'll be tuning in and wishing you much success. I mean, I think it's going to be ridiculously successful, you know, and it's exciting to be part of it.
All right, you're awesome. That is Boy George there, live on his sofa, looking like he's good to go to any event in the world. He is so... Look at that. I mean... Talk about, you know, brushed and ready to go and judged up. Boy George, supporting our auction for Ukraine. Lot number 20 and lot number 21. Bid now.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky.
Virgin Radio.
He's got more indie anthems to his name than you've had hot dinners, and he's serving them up in an arena near you. Tickets are on sale for the Kaiser Chiefs' brand new UK tour at 9 a.m. this morning. So please welcome the man that's taking Ruby, Ruby, Ruby on the roadie, roadie, roadie. It's Ricky Wilson!
He's good, isn't he? He's good, isn't
he? He's getting better. I know. He's actually getting better. Not only from COVID, but also at his job.
Hey, did you have COVID? I saw on Instagram.
I did.
Gnarly, isn't it?
Horrible.
Yeah.
When
horrible.
Did you get yours?
About 3 weeks ago.
Isn't it interesting because Nick, who's our boss, Aussie Nick and Magic Mike, they both got COVID. They haven't had it at all. Dave, had you had it at all?
Nope.
Okay.
Nothing.
My pal Ali had never had it at all. She contracted it 2 weeks ago. Aussie Jane had never had it at all. It seems like if you haven't had it, now is when you're getting it. So that sort of speaks to me in as much as I think the vaccines plus antibodies from having had it is protecting you. Maybe it's by the way, last time I looked, I'm not a scientist.
No, I was going to say that. It's speaking to the nation, Chris.
Yeah. It's never stopped me before. And it's not going to stop me now. But maybe that's... Is that a thing, Vass?
It sort of feels like it could be.
Yeah, this is how it goes, isn't it?
Yeah.
Experts. Yeah. We're all experts now. We've watched enough TV about it.
We know what we're talking. Right, Ricky. How and when did Kaiser Chiefs decide to go back on tour? Because if I was in Kaiser Chiefs, I would just be on tour all the time. I'd be like the Rolling Stones.
Good point. Well, it's been 20 years...
Not since the last tour, mate.
No. Feels like it. But we do it, literally, we'll do it when we're allowed. Until they stop us, we'll keep going. But you can't do it every day. Can you?
No, I know what you mean, but
it's
I just
not
say,
like radio.
No, I know, but so the last tour was 2019, and this is going to be in November, 13 day arena tour. You know, a plus maybe more dates could always be added, I suppose.
I reckon they probably will.
Speaking out of turn here, but nevertheless, gigsandtours.com is where you need to go. Gigsandtours.com and/or Ticketmaster.co.uk. Gigsandtours.com and/or Ticketmaster.co.uk. And like Stereophonics, you know, you will never have a better night out as far as live music is concerned than with these.
It's not just us as well. We've got the Fratellis.
Oh, what?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Us and the Fratellis supporting and the Sherlocks.
See, now they're just joyous,
aren't they? Come on.
And the whole thing, though, is that like their melodies, that those cascading melodies, they're just full of joy, aren't they?
Whistle for the Choir, that's one of my favourites.
Oh, my goodness. I like their last song. Their last single, we should play.
Enough about them and James Bay. More about me.
You brought them up.
I know I did. But now I'm excited to see them. We were going to cover that, but now we can't because they're on before us.
No, but so we're waiting until November. Are you going to play Carfest for us again? Thank you.
Of course.
Thank you. 27th
of August. Wouldn't miss it.
Thank you so much. Really appreciate that. Really from the bottom of my heart.
Can I have a tent again?
You know what you want, mate.
Thank you. I'd like a tent.
But you have a stage.
I know, yeah, but no, I mean, like, to stay in.
No, but you could stay on the stage because it's like a big tent anyway, isn't it?
Do you know what? You should have that as a prize.
An auction prize. Stay on the stage at Carfest.
Yeah. Let's do it.
Yeah. Lot 122, stay on the stage, not during the performances.
No, but like when it's all shut down, you're looking
stay on
like
the stage.
An empty field.
Stay on the stage.
Stay on the stage.
Yeah.
Oh, it's a good prize.
And
that
could be for you plus 99 of your friends. It's like a really
big tent. How would you get the tent pegs in?
They're already in. I mean, it's done, isn't it?
No, I mean, in the stage. Like, you can't put a tent up.
No, I think the canvas, I think the tent is the cover, the mega canvas.
Oh, you just sleep out?
I would say so.
Okay.
I think that's all right.
All right. Yeah, I think, it'll be sunny.
I still want to get to the bottom of, if I was in Kaiser Chiefs, I would go out and tour. I wouldn't be able to help myself.
Okay.
I'd just go and play anywhere that would have me.
Well, you know, we went in 2019, yeah. Then something happened for a couple of years,
yeah,
and then we're back. So, yeah, it's...
And when do you pick, like, you know, when you compose an album, because you compose songs and the songs are recorded, and you think, okay, now these have made the album. You have your own little sort of Britain's Got Talent panel moment, I would imagine, with the gang. Is that how that works?
Yeah.
With the other members of the band?
Yeah, we're quite childish when it comes to that. We always aim everything we do at the Carfest stage. That's where the that audience is great. And then what we do is write a song, and then we all leave the room, and then we walk back into the room as if we're walking on a stage.
Honest. Yeah, I love that.
And then we say, right, this time play it. And Whitey, you have to stand up for the whole song.
That's so
which
cool.
He doesn't like standing up.
Right.
He'll stand up when there's 10,000 people looking at him. But if there's not, he's sitting. So he has to stand up, and we play it as if we're playing in front of a massive
and
crowd.
And then what happens?
And then we go, yeah, that one works.
And do you take a vote, or is it a discussion, or is there a golden buzzer?
No, it's just we know. When you know, you know.
Really?
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Also, I always know when Whitey and Simon start doing backing vocals, I know it's good because they're very lazy.
Obviously, they don't make that. They don't. Hopefully, don't make it to the final recording.
No, of course not.
The BBC. Good. You have to leave space for the crowd to think that they've thought of something.
Yeah.
Because that was good.
Yeah.
But once you come up with the tracks for an album, then you have to sort of compose the album, i.e. which track goes where. Opening track has to be a banger, I would imagine.
Of course. I've got that.
Closing track has to be a banger as well.
I've got the closer.
Right,
no, closer. I like a lullaby at the end.
Really?
Yeah, I like something that you don't... You know, sometimes, because I go to sleep at night watching Law & Order SVU.
Right.
And the end,
not because it's rubbish and boring.
No, it's actually weird because it's very exciting, but it lulls me to sleep.
Soporific,
soporific.
Yeah. Yeah.
But the end titles are too loud for me because they wake me up.
Interesting.
And I like to be. I like that. And I always go, it's ended.
Yeah. It's like the symbols in Hall's Planets.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That kind of thing. That's that's why they do that in classical music, isn't it?
To wake people up.
Yeah. No, I heard that.
Yeah. Oh, I hope the guys at Classic FM aren't.
No, but I heard that it's really how they did that.
It really.
Your Mozarts and your
to tell you. You can
because they're so long and they go.
Now go grab an ice cream.
That's why they have those big moments in those songs, just in case.
Yeah, well, we should do that.
But no,
we
usually you don't need it, mate.
We usually end an album on a kind of like a little moment to think. Mm.
So Brian Adams said similar last week, a couple of weeks ago when
Did he
came in. Yeah, he said
all the best to it.
He said it's more a bow to tie things up with.
Right,
that kind of thing.
Yeah.
You fold your arms. Do you disagree?
No, I'm folding my arms.
Are you cold?
No. I'm thinking about it. I'm thinking. It's just the way we've always done it.
All right, so tickets for Kaiser Chiefs tour for November go on sale at 9 o'clock. Gigsandtours.com is where you need to go. Gigsandtours.com and ticketmaster.co.uk. 13 dates announced now. More will be added. Surely that will happen. Yeah. Now, we've got a countdown to tickets going on sale. It's not 9
it's
o'clock.
Two minutes. It's 1 minute 50 seconds.
Yeah, but there's a lag in DAB world.
Oh, right, okay.
So even if we do it now, it's probably going to be post 9 o'clock. So okay. Should we just do it now?
Well, we could have a countdown for people to get their internet sorted.
Yeah, something like that. I think it's our fault. It's our end, not their end. Yeah, come on now.
2, 1. Right, you can get your tickets in a minute and a half.
Kaiser Chiefs to go!
Yeah!
Kaiser Chiefs on tour in an arena, at an arena near you too, if you live in Hull.
I'm so glad I don't have to get tickets, because it'd be stressful. But I don't. They let me in.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky.
Virgin Radio.
So, we've heard from a bunch of stunning guests already, but still to come, actor, comedian and awesome author Charlie Higson shares all about his new thriller, the first adult thriller from the Higson keyboard for 25 years. Whatever Gets You Through the Night is its title. Our Formula One and only David Crofty Croft gets us all revved up ahead of the Saudi Arabian Grand Prix on Sky Sports F1. Ex-professional cricketer Patrick Foster shares his incredible life story in his new book, Might Bite, The Secret Life of a Gambling Addict. And the hilarious and heartfelt Rachel Paris tells us about her brilliant new book, Advice from Strangers. So let's get right back to it. Vassos, who's next?
From Swiss Tony selling cars to kids navigating a zombie apocalypse, our next guest will have you hooked no matter what. His new novel, Whatever Gets You Through the Night, is out now. So whether you're after a fast show or a slow read, he's got you covered. It's the masterful Charlie Higson.
Thank you very much indeed. Sorry, trigger happy there, but too excited about yesterday's guest. Not that I'm not excited about you, Charlie.
Well, no, it's a slow read and you prefer yesterday's guest.
No,
I'm off home.
You know that's not true. So, Charlie, you are fresh from the desert. Tell us why.
Yeah, I've written and am showrunning a huge 10-hour fantasy series that is filming in the deserts of the Middle East.
Right, now you can't tell us too much, but you've told us probably more than you've intended to already. And you're getting messages as we speak from the production team.
Yes, they're about to start shooting and I need to sign off on some costumes for some new characters. I say, I can't do this now. I'm about to go in to talk to the mighty Chris Evans.
I can only apologise. Sorry, everyone. Please pass on my apologies.
But so, no, it is brilliant. You know, it's like a childhood dream. You know, the reason I got into to TV was to make big, exciting shows.
Yeah.
And to make a huge, big fantasy series. You know, it is...
So you've written it as well?
Yeah, it's based on some books that are bestsellers out there.
Right.
And they want it to have, if possible, sort of international appeal.
Okay, now this is off the back of shows like Squid Game, where people have realised, oh, it doesn't have to be in English to be a massive hit.
Exactly, and I think that part of the success of Squid Game was the fact that it had so much of the Korean character in it, and people responded to that. It was different, it felt different. The only unconvincing bits were when they had the American actors in it playing the rich men. They were terrible.
See, I've not seen Squid Games. Is it Squid Game or Squid Games?
Squid Game.
Squid Game.
I think.
Squid Game. You've seen it, haven't you?
No, my son has. He's told me all about it.
So it's the number one show on Netflix, isn't it? Number two is Bridgerton. Which is fantastic, isn't it? Different kettle of fish, completely. So, Charlie, you know, as far as all the jobs are concerned that you've done your writing, you know, directing this massive mega series, 10 hours. You've been in front of the camera as well as behind the camera. What do you like best, or do you not have to make that decision?
I love writing. And if anyone asked me what I do, I'd say I'm a writer.
Is that because it's cool?
No, it's just because I love that process of just sitting by myself and making stuff up. And to be paid to make stuff up is a pretty good job.
But it is also cool. To be a writer is a cool thing.
Is it?
Yeah, no, I think it is. So this is just my opinion. It doesn't matter.
I mean, you know...
It wasn't actually a real question, to be honest.
Right. But if I'd been a real professional, I would have said, yeah, I love writing. And my new book, Whatever Gets You Through the Night.
I love the fact you adopted a DJ voice for that.
No, it's great to be here, great mate, here on Fab FM.
Yeah. Charlie Higson, whatever gets you through the night. Now, a major event, says Mark Billingham in part of the blurb on the front cover. And this is because it's your first grown up novel for 25 years. Not you writing as a grown up, but about, you know, aimed at the adult market. Why not, of course, but why so long?
Well, I mean, I wrote four adult crime books in the early 90s, and then TV took over. I was too busy on the Fast Show and stuff of that nature. So, and my editor kept saying, have you got another one? And I'd say, oh, sorry, I'm a bit busy. And he'd ring, like, once every 6 months, and then once a year, and then once every five years. And then he stopped. And when I went back to writing novels, when I took a bit of a break from TV, was to do kids' books, because I had kids and I wanted to write something for them. And I was offered to do Young James Bond by the Ian Fleming Estate, which was like a fantasy job, really.
Yeah, yeah.
To sit down and write the names Bond, James Bond.
I know. It's so cool, isn't it? Now, kids' books aren't easier, but they are less time-consuming, I would imagine.
Well, it depends. If you're writing for younger kids, obviously they tend to be shorter.
Right.
And, you know, you don't want huge, great slabs of dense text. But, you know, the Bond books, and particularly the Enemy books, which were more for sort of younger teenagers, they're 400 pages long. That's a proper book. And, yeah, writing for kids, you've got to grab them and keep them entertained. And you know, they're not like adults who start a book and think, oh, I'm not really enjoying it, but I better read it.
So this book, 25 years on from the last one, right, you're a different writer, you're a different human being. So you're back to a discipline you'd done before, but almost as someone else. So how is this different to them? What have you deployed that you've learned in between then and now? Or is that not something you consciously bear in mind?
Well, no, I mean, best not to overthink it. I mean, it was definitely a release on many levels to go back to writing for adults, because you could write about some things that you couldn't write in kids' books, and explore some of the a lot more adult themes. I mean, there are broad adult themes in kids' books, but in terms of the way people speak and what they do, you can be a little bit more explicit. And I was slightly worried going back after 25 years, because the cultural climate has changed. And I like to write crime books that are about criminals rather than police and detectives. So I like to get inside a twisted psychopathic mind.
Or maybe several.
And several, yes, and try and understand why they do what they do. And, you know, there's a danger. And this, you know, it comes into a bit like also about writing satire, that when you show a racist, say, for instance, you want them to speak and think like a racist does. And there's a danger that things get pulled out of context and they say, well, Charlie Higson's written a racist book. And you think, well, I haven't. I've written about a racist.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, the debate has changed a bit on that. And I was worried that and in fact, you know, I've foolishly looked at some reviews, user reviews on Amazon,
right,
which you should never do. And, you know, a couple of them are saying, oh, you know, I don't like the way this book... the way Charlie Higson writes about women, it's objectifying them and not in a nice way. And that's a character in the book. And the character is an unpleasant character saying and thinking those things. It's not me. But people, I mean, most people can understand how a book works, but some will look at it at face value. Because you don't want to constantly be saying, this person thought this and they're a bad person, and we shouldn't agree with what they say because they're... But you don't want... You know, you want to get inside their mind and let the reader make their own judgments.
All right, happy Thursday, Charlie. Thank you so much. OK, thanks, Vassos. Thanks, Rachel. Thanks, everyone. See you tomorrow.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky.
Virgin Radio.
Your mum might have told you not to talk to strangers, but for our next guest, it's turned out rather well. She's a BAFTA-nominated comedian, musician, actor and improviser whose hilarious new book, Advice from Strangers, is out now. And she's also currently on tour everywhere. Please welcome Rachel Paris.
Good morning, Rachel.
Hello.
Welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm good, thank you.
Congratulations on your amazing book.
Thanks so much.
So yesterday I was reading it and I was marking things that we could talk about, and then I just gave up because I ended up marking every page. So I don't really know where to go. We can dip it anywhere you like. I mean, I got to say, I think you might be able to guess what my favourite three chapters are.
I mean, from immediately before I came on air, never pass up the opportunity for a wee.
No, because they're all the same one. It's hashtag one, hashtag two, hashtag three.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's what's meant for you will not pass you by.
They're the ones that I really didn't think you would talk about.
Oh, my goodness.
Because
me.
I thought daytime radio, you'd have to be like...
Well, you obviously don't listen to the show. We talk about that all the time.
Wow. Yeah.
Rachel Paris, Advice from Strangers. So the premise of the book is what? How did it all happen, Rachel?
It's that, spurred on by being asked to write an inspirational speech and me not having a clue what to say in that, I decided to use my comedy shows for a year and ask the audiences, everyone all over the country, for real bits of their advice that they'd give me. And they wrote them down on little scraps of paper. And I kept them. This was a few years ago. And so every chapter in the book is a real piece of advice from a total stranger.
Yeah.
And I just jump off from whatever that is.
It's brilliant. It's brilliant. I love it so much.
Thank you.
Because we've all got these little post-it notes in our lives, virtual or real or otherwise,
yeah.
haven't we? Don't tell your friends about your Jane Austen sex fantasy is one. And this sort of lends itself to your ostentation, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Which I love. Tell people about ostentation and ostentatious.
So that's a show which I made with some friends about, 11 years ago now? And it's still running, where we dress up in Jane Austen clothes. It sounds like we're just playing out our fantasies, and we are. And we get the audience to suggest a made-up book title, and then we make a Jane Austen story out of it in a sort of play. And it's really fun and really silly, and it's still on. It's on at Leicester Square Theatre every month.
I would respectfully request that you give us a reading from your book. Would you read?
Is there a bit that you have in mind?
You know where I'm going with this.
Are you going with the Shakespearean speech?
No, I'm going with page 253.
253.
253.
Here I am flicking. I don't know all the bits off my heart.
This will get us to the end of the show if you fancy it.
Oh, yeah, I'd be happy to.
All right, so can you give us a little pretext?
Yes, I will. So this is the third of the chapters, which began with the miscarriage and then an anxious pregnancy, and this is the third of those chapters.
Can I say, we have a lot of books on this theme that come into the show, and a lot of authors, but this is the most beautifully framed depiction of having a baby I've ever read.
Oh, thank you so much. That means a lot. So I diarised it because I wrote it 17th of September 2021. This morning, I was up at 3:30 a.m, 6 a.m. and 8 a.m. I've been vomited on twice. I have poo on my dressing gown. My tits hurt. My head hurts. I'm starving. And a demonic siren is going off inches from my head. I am very lucky. My beautiful boy arrived at tea time on a cold day at the end of July, all purple and covered in white goop. Summer never came this year. There was no heat, no sunny days. We kept thinking summer would arrive late, but it's passed us by completely. But our summer, our sunshine, came in the form of this little parcel. My seasons would now revolve around him. From the moment he was handed to me, I couldn't quite believe he was mine. I can't believe I get to keep him. I know I'm biased, but he is the best baby of them all, and I'm sorry to the other mums who have other babies, but this fact is obvious. From the second he was born, he was constantly moving his arms and legs, just like he did in the womb. I recognise those big kicks, those furtive reaches, his tiny hands making gestures, patterns and signs in the air. Sometimes like a wizard casting a spell, sometimes like a conductor leading a symphony, sometimes like a 90s raver dancing in the Prodigy. He looks mad. I love his mad little hands. It is tiring, yes. I'm so exhausted some days I literally can't move my face. Nap whenever you can, this advice says. Nap whenever the baby naps, the books say. But it doesn't work. When they're awake, you're looking after them with both hands. And when they're asleep, you finally get time to eat, wee, and possibly, as a luxury, wash. But washing's a rare treat. And I'm now resigned to constantly smelling of milk, vom, sweat and dry shampoo. It's tiring, it's upsetting. When he cries for hours and it's just you and him and you want to help him and you can't help him except to keep holding him and telling him it's all right and that he's safe and that you love him, all while mainlining paracetamol to stave off that migraine he's giving you. It's tiring, it's upsetting, it's life-changing. I cried the most about how not knowing how I would ever leave the house alone again or how I'd ever work or travel or write or wear anything except sit-covered slacks and stained nursing bras that utterly failed to support my massive, unwieldy boobs that didn't feel like mine anymore. It's all those things, and it is the best thing in the world. I found the clichés to be true. It's the most difficult, most brilliant thing. I wonder if he knows how much he is loved. I wonder if that seeps through somehow into their little heads. I wonder if he knows how wanted he is and how happy he makes people. People say he looks like his dad, or like me, or like his granddad, or his cousin, or his nephew half removed. But I say he looks like himself. He just looks like a totally new person to me, which seems like a bit of magic. We made him. I grew him. But here he is, and he's just himself, a brand new human. We were given piles and piles of secondhand baby clothes from friends and family, and one of the baby grows we were given has Little Miracle on the front. I never liked that kind of cheesy branding around baby stuff, and when I first saw it before he was born, I thought it was mawkish. But I get it now. I saw him in it this morning, and I thought, yeah, there's something in that. He is a little miracle, but not from God. He's our miracle. I am his, and he is mine. My baby, my boy, my Billy.
How good is that? You're awesome.
Thank you.
Your book is awesome.
Thank you.
I'm so happy for you and Billy and Marcus.
Thank you so much.
The book is Advice from Strangers by Rachel Paris. Everything I know from people I don't know, and quite a lot from what she does know from herself.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky.
Virgin Radio.
Where are we off to right now, live on your radio, Vassos?
The new F1 season is already looking very tasty indeed, with Ferrari out of trouble, Mercedes in a muddle and Red Bull in a puddle. That's right, the Saudi Arabian Grand Prix is live and exclusive on Sky Sports F1 this weekend. And here to tell us more is our Formula One and only, it's Crofty!
He is the one and only... live from Saudi Arabia. How are you, Crofty?
Oh, good. How are you?
I'm good. But we do... we're going to go in there straight away. It's the pointy end of the conversation. It'll only get easier after this, Crofty. Don't worry. We no longer think... we no longer think that Formula One is actual spontaneous sport. We think it's scripted drama. There's no way that that race could have carried on, you know, like almost like... you know, it's like the second season of Succession, for heaven's sake. You know?
I know. It was a bit dramatic. You know who I blame? I blame Martin Brundle, because when he left the commentary box to go and interview the top three, all hell broke loose. If it had just stayed where he was, we'd have had a bit of continuity.
I know.
Yeah, Red Bull, not good, not good. They had fuel in the car. I'm told there was 12 kilos of fuel in Max's car and 6 in Checo's. But I don't think the pump could get the fuel out. You know when you have like a super thick milkshake or a freshly squeezed orange juice and you get a pip stuck in the straw?
Yes.
I think it was a bit like that. And
then,
that's about the best analogy I can give you. They need to reposition their fuel pump. That's not the work of a moment. They might be the favourites this weekend, but it doesn't mean they're going to finish first. I think they've got a few head-scratching moments.
Well, that's the thing, isn't it? You know, if it's particularly hot and your fuel gets hot and it gets a bit too thin, there's not enough of it to fire up those cylinders. That's about as technical as I can get. But they just need to maybe move it to somewhere that's a bit cooler.
But you know Adrian very well, Adrian Newey. Yeah. He's not the man that likes to sacrifice performance over reliability. He likes to put everything in the performance column, which is also why they're having trouble with their brakes overheating a bit, and why Max was being told just to hang back and keep the car a bit cooler in Bahrain. And if you thought Bahrain was hot, Jeddah's going to be even hotter. There might be a stiff breeze blowing down the Corniche this morning, but it is warm, it is humid, it's muggy, it's a street race, and I don't fancy the entire field of 20 finishing this race. It's going to be a proper race of attrition, this one.
Yeah, it was great last Sunday, and it was lovely to see lots of drivers in contention for lots of the time. The brand new aerodynamics work, as far as overtaking is concerned, that was really exciting. The front two doing the who's in the lead, hokey cokey. That was good fun. That was all great.
Yeah.
As far as Max Verstappen is concerned, you know, I didn't know whether to say this to you on the radio or not. Somebody just needs to have a little quiet word in his ear. He's not coming across fantastically on the radio.
Yeah, calm down, Max.
Also, just be a bit nicer.
A little bit.
Be a bit nicer to your teammates.
I know, he is a nice guy, though. I have a lot of time for Max. He's always been really friendly. But all this, I'm never doing this ever, ever, ever again. It's like we've entered the terrible twos as he goes for his second world championship. You know, he just got a bit too stoppy there. I will have a word on your behalf.
Yeah, but also it's not good for his performance. Anybody will tell you that. You know, you can't be angry and at your peak at the same time. It's like you can't be funny when you're angry. You can't come up with a good idea when you're angry. When you are angry, if you let the you can have anger if you put a bit of distance between you and it, and it can be useful. But when you become the anger, you are useless.
Absolutely, because the anger is all consuming, and all you're doing is looking to blame people and shout and stomp around a bit. I couldn't agree more.
That's good.
That's why I'm not getting angry this morning, that I'm not allowed to go down to breakfast without wearing a pair of trousers. I can't wear my shorts at breakfast. That's not making me angry at all.
Outrageous.
40 odd degrees out there, and apparently shorts are banned in the breakfast room. What have I entered?
What the heck is that? I don't like it when they have sartorial etiquette. I mean, I think you know you've got to be smart whenever you can. If that's required, if it's respectful to do so, but I don't think you should ever be told what to wear ever in life.
Correct. It's like being back at school again. I didn't like wearing school uniform either. That doesn't make me angry. Not at all.
The thought of you now, your age, in a school uniform, that'd be hilarious. I think you should do that one day. A mufti day for Ukraine or something. That'd be funny. All right. So whet our appetite a bit more. I mean, if you saw the first race, you don't need your appetite whetting going into the second race of the F1 season with Sky Sports F1. But if you didn't see it, give us a quick 30-second taster and tease.
Okay. So great news. Haas are back. Kevin Magnussen is back. And they've got a top five finish in Bahrain, and that put a smile on everyone's face. Even better news, it's wide open out in front. Ferrari took the first race, 46 races without a win, and they bounced back with a 1-2 finish. Saw Carlos Sainz yesterday. He said, look, we're in a good place, but we think Red Bull are faster than us here. We've got our work cut out. Red Bull are fast, but they're fragile. Can they get to the end of the race? Can they finish? Mercedes are definitely not sandbagging. They are in a bit of trouble, but Lewis Hamilton got a podium, and he has a bigger margin over Max Verstappen at the moment than he did in the entire 2021 season. So it's all to play for. Hamilton becomes, yes, by the way, 180th start with Mercedes. That means he has made more starts with Mercedes than any single driver has ever made at any single team ever in the history of Formula One. Wouldn't it be great to see him back on the podium? I personally fancy that Red Bull will take it, but Ferrari are right there in the hunt.
Good, that's excellent. I love that. Are you going to sort of reverse engineer a bit of your past darts commentary into this Sunday? You've got to have a 180 going on there somewhere, haven't you, Fro?
Sounds like a magnificent idea. I hadn't even considered it, but I have now.
You're very welcome, Crofty. You know where
Thank
I am
you, sir.
If you need me. Give my love to the team there. I still fancy that idea of you lot in school uniform. A bit of a mufti day going on for Ukraine. That'd be fun. Goodbye.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky.
Virgin Radio.
Our next guest's story is as terrifying as it is inspirational. His new book, Might Bite, The Secret Life of a Gambling Addict, is out now. And it's an extremely honest account of a lot of lying. And I'll bet you anything it'll make you think twice before placing that next wager. Please welcome Patrick Foster.
Good morning, Pat.
Hi, guys. How are you?
Oh, well, it's a real honour to meet you, my friend.
Thank you. That's kind. It's great to be on the show.
Okay, this is some story. Might Bite. First of all, let's just explain the title for people listening.
Yeah, it's one of the things that came quickest to me when I wrote the book, in that I guess there's two reasons. One, it was the bet that kind of changed my world. It wasn't actually quite my final bet, but 4 years ago tomorrow, that was the time I placed my last bet, and I put a huge amount of money on a horse called Might Bite during the Cheltenham Festival that came second. I always say it's the best thing that ever happened to me, but at the time it wasn't, because my world came crashing down. And when I was thinking about the title of the book, obviously it's a play on words as well, it seemed the obvious thing. So yeah, I'm quite pleased with that part.
Now, you come from a privileged background, but you were by no means a high flyer when you were placing these bets. What were you doing in life at the time?
Yeah, I started gambling at university, like a lot of people, as a bit of fun with my mates. Didn't think it was a problem because I had the time and money to do it, because I was actually playing professional cricket at the time. And then, unfortunately, that ended. And I think that was a catalyst for my gambling spiralling out of control, because I found that really difficult to deal with. But I didn't want to admit that to people. I didn't want to let on that I was struggling, because I'd never struggled with anything. I thought showing vulnerability was weakness, and gambling started to play a different part of my life. And then when I moved into the city, was working in insurance, that was when it really did get out of control. I had a huge win in 2010, as I write about in the book, and that completely changed my relationship with gambling. And I guess you could call me a high flyer at that time, but when I lost all that money very quickly and started descending into debt, I was anything but.
You were teaching?
Yeah, then I changed my life. I became a teacher, thinking that if I changed my lifestyle, it would get rid of the problem. But I now know I needed to change me. And when I taught, it got worse. And obviously, I went on to do things that I regret hugely. But it was out of desperation, and my addiction really took hold of me, consumed me, and I'd eventually lose my job as a teacher, rightly so.
And you were borrowing money from other teachers' parents as well?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, to be honest, I borrowed money off anyone and everybody. All rationality went out the window. It was just pure desperation, and I kind of took advantage of the situation that I was in. I was very aware that I was surrounded by money. People liked, respected me, were worried about me, and I took advantage of that, and I'm not proud of it at all. But it did enable and allow me to gamble for way longer than I ever thought was possible.
Such a chilling account. I mean, you know, you can't put the book down, but you know, as I was saying to you off the air, I said to Vasa earlier on, you know, we read some heavy books for this show, but I don't think any book has gripped me like yours and made me feel anxious, because we're all so close to falling to a similar fate, because it's about compulsion, isn't it? It's about reframing things to suit the world how you want it to be, as opposed to how the world is and most useful to you, and, you know, to being sort of functional in that world. For the right reasons, as opposed to functioning alcoholics, this functioning gambling addicts, this functioning all kinds of addicts, and you wouldn't know, and a lot of the people in your world didn't know. But listen to this, everyone. I'd received close to £110,000 in free bets this year. The year was 2017. I placed 27,988 bets with a single bookmaker. That's close to 77 bets every day, and that's just with one bookie. And, you know, this is whilst having to sleep, it's whilst having to breathe, it's whilst having to go to the loo, it's whilst having to go to work, it's whilst having to hold down a relationship. But the thing about addiction is, you know, it's because you don't realize, because you're the addict, how much energy you're putting into it, because it's so automatic. And if you could actually sort of if you could harvest that energy and put it in some to real life, you'd be unstoppable.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the things I talk about now when I share my story with young people is that actually having an addictive personality, however you want to term it, if channeled in the right way, you can be so successful. And my addictive personality manifests itself in all sorts of weird and wonderful ways now. And I actually see how powerful that can be. But when you're in the height of your addiction with something that is having that negative impact, it's incredible. And the way it just takes over everything. In the book, it was almost quite hard to articulate how I just wouldn't let anything get in the way of my next bet. And as you say, all those things that are so important, sleeping, looking after the people around you and that you love, they just become and play second fiddle to your addiction, and it's scary. And when you get that back, it's incredible. It's so incredible. Liberating.
It's like heaven sent, isn't it? But also, what's also, I think, unbelievable is how little people around you notice what might be wrong, because we all think about other people a lot more than we do, because actually even the most selfless of us think about ourselves more than anybody else. We often worry about what people think more than what we think of ourselves, but it's self-delusional, isn't it? How much we think other people think about us.
Yeah, and that's one of the really scary things about it. It's often described as a hidden or invisible addiction, rightly so. But I think it's the case with any addiction, really. You just become so good at hiding it, and that becomes addictive in itself. It was like a full-time job for me, and it was exhausting. I say I used to go into school, and if you ask most of the kids that I taught, they would probably think I was probably the last person that had a problem, because I went to such a degree to hide it or to make sure that I was covering it up. But then when I was behind closed doors, it would just break me. I was exhausting, but I just kept doing it over and over again. And this kind of spiral of just nothingness, where it was just so difficult to get out of, was exhausting.
Yeah, well done for writing this book. Patrick Foster is the chap's name you're listening to. The book's called Might Bite, The Secret Life of a Gambling Addict. And it is, once you've picked it up, you can't put it down. I would recommend this to anyone and everyone.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky.
Virgin Radio.
Thank you so much for listening to this, the podcast of the Virgin Radio Breakfast Show. Don't forget, you can subscribe and get it every week from wherever you get your podcast, and you will never miss the weekly roundup of all the best bits from our Virgin Radio Breakfast Show with Sky.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.